Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Claudia and Kate Nichols have a unique mother-daughter relationship. Kate is a caregiver for her mother, Claudia, who has stage 4 breast cancer. Now, they run a podcast together called Stage 4 Clinger that takes a humorous look at their situation. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, they share their story about Claudia's cancer journey and how the podcast came to fruition, as well as how they turn painful moments into comedy.
So with this, we're obviously going to talk about your cancer journey, your podcast, which is amazing, by the way, your relationship to your mother and how it's kind of blossomed over this time. So Claudia, tell us about your cancer journey, if you don't mind.
It was 2017 and Kate came home from Los Angeles because she was completely
exhausted.
Exhausted.
I wanted a break. I wanted my mom to take care of me.
Yes.
For and a month.
While she's home, I started, you know, getting my mammogram, and then I flunked that, and then I get a mammogram and a something else, and I flunked that, and then biopsies. And so finally, by about March, I think.
No, I came home in February. Yeah. In March. Yeah, probably first week of March, you were diagnosed with what they thought was stage 1 breast cancer.
So according to them, I had the best cancer you could possibly
have. The Cadillac of cancers, yeah.
It's HER2 negative. Wait, HR positive, HER2 negative.
Mm-hmm.
And stage 1. And we're like...
Well, and they thought it was in one breast only.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking I'm going to get a tummy tuck and I'm going to have my boobs redone, you know? So I'm like, okay,
She goes to Mercy Medical and decides to go with them for her, which we love Mercy Medical.
Yes, absolutely.
They're telling her that, you know, oh, it's great. You're just going to, you know, we'll do the double mastectomy.
Didn't say it's great.
it's amazing. We'll just do the double mastectomy. We'll give you a tummy tuck. We'll take that fat, give you a fresh rack.
And I've been working on that fat for years to make it into new boobs. So mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was, you know, I can't say I was excited. I was apprehensive.
But it was the silver lining.
It was the icing on the cake.
So she goes in for surgery and I'd been by her side for all of these appointments. And I was the one taking down all the notes and recording everything and because she's the emotional one. And so as soon as the doctor starts talking, she starts crying every single appointment and is not retaining any information. And so I had to.
Everyone needs to take their own recorder.
Yes.
Because you do need that person. Not that she wasn't upset.
But I'm able to. I was in the doing mode and not the feeling mode. Feelings came later for me.
Yeah.
And so I was told specific times of how long it was going to take for her to get the mastectomy. And then that doctor would come out and talk to me. And that would mean that the plastic surgeon had gone in to start. That doctor hadn't come at the 2-hour marker, the 3-hour marker, the 4-hour marker. We're going on to 7 hours. So I know exactly what that means.
Something's not good.
I know that it's in her lymph nodes. I know that it's not what they thought it was, you know, so I'm prepping. My brother came in town for that surgery and my cousin, and I'm trying to prep them for it because I'm like, okay, guys, this is what this means. And they take us into the small room and tell us, and it was, you know, it was awful finding out that it wasn't the cakewalk that we thought it was going to be.
I didn't even get the tummy tuck and the breast.
That's the first thing she said. She was all hopped up on, anesthesia, and we see her and she's like, I didn't get no boobs.
But they did take the ones that tried to kill me, so that's the good news.
Mm-hmm. And how many lymph nodes?
Like I had 23 on one side and 26 on the other. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Removed.
So evidently my cancer was playing more in the lymph nodes than in the breasts.
It was really strange.
Sneaky. Yeah.
The doctor that we first went to when you failed your mammogram biopsy and needed to get a biopsy had such a hard time even pinpointing the lump that they were going to have her wait another 6 months and come back to get it biopsied. So that's when we decided to go, because we're from a small town, and that's when we decided to go to Baltimore, the closest like large city that we could. Thank God, because that would have been awful.
Yeah. So then they said it's probably stage 3, and they gave me some medications that I would need. And we thought that I would be having radiation and chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
but I'm not healthy enough for radiation. They found out it was
in the bones.
Yeah.
Where in the bones?
So I've got three spots. Like I've got one in my rib, one in my rib, one in my pelvis, and one in my vertebrae. Uh-huh. And then I have like three on the brain as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got six
little
spots, but they're small. So mm-hmm. I feel good about that.
So we were at her post-op appointment. There was a period of time after she had the double mastectomy and we found out that it was worse than we thought, that you had started dealing with anxiety for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was like, I couldn't leave the room without her being like, where are you going? That's
when are you
going
to be back?
When are you going to be back? Where are you going? And that's really where she's already a clingy enough mother. You can see that we act like an old married couple, but that was the real clingy part. So I got so overwhelmed that I was like, Mom, I'll be gone for 10 minutes. And I hauled down the road. I go to her doctor's office and I just burst in with no appointment. And I'm just like, my mom needs Xanax. She needs anti-anxiety medication. They're like, okay, let's get you away from the other patients. They take me in the back and they write her a prescription. and then we went to your follow-up appointment with your plastic surgeon up at Mercy Medical, who we had a bit of a crush on. He's like a
cutie.
And he would always wear pink shirts.
You're getting off the subject.
We're talking about when you were diagnosed. So we're in the middle of, and you had just cracked a joke about, he said, you don't have to take your shirt off. And you said, but you want me to, don't you?
We always try to make them laugh because I don't think they get their daily dose of laughter.
Yes. So we always try to make them laugh. Yeah. But then the call came in from your PET scan saying that you had the spots.
Yeah.
And so then we both start crying and he doesn't know what to do now at this point. Because we went from hitting on him pretty aggressively to crying.
And then I said, am I allowed to have alcohol? And he said, well, I would.
He's like, I would if I were you.
You know, mm-hmm. that was when we went through kind of the grieving and the sadness and the gathering family but I don't feel like we were stuck in that for too long, were we?
No, you had a couple days of grieving. I was still in doing, but at that point, you kept not wanting to tell people every step of the way. Like when we first found out that she was diagnosed, she didn't want to tell my brother. She didn't want to tell any family members.
Well, we had to tell my son because he was there. So there was nothing, you know, we weren't getting out of that.
No.
But I wasn't, I didn't.
No, when you were diagnosed, he wasn't there and you didn't want to tell him. Each step of the way, you kept feeling like, you've said multiple times, you kept feeling like you wanted to.
I wanted to process it first and see how I felt about it before I started throwing it out there. But the problem is that I have a daughter who loves to tell everything to everyone. And I wasn't able to keep much of this to myself.
Well, yes. And I always push her past her comfort zone. And I advocated for myself saying that you can't only lean on me for this. I gave her a little bit of time not to tell my brother and a little bit of time not to tell everybody. But it's not, we discussed how it wasn't fair to me for me to be her only support. And we went through several things like that, where, you know, if you needed something, it was only me that you'd call instead of friends or other relatives. You've said many times, which I always thought was interesting, how the type of person you are, you wanted to like keep it a secret and whisper the word cancer, but then you realized that you hadn't done anything wrong.
It did. It took me a while because you start feeling like, oh my gosh, what have I done? And you feel like this is dirty laundry that you're sharing. And then I realized, and once I realized this, you know, we're ready to be cancer bullies at this point. I realized I haven't done a daggone thing wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't overly do anything that would cause, I don't smoke. I was exercising. I have a, you know, fairly good fat to height ratio. So when I realized I don't really have anything to be embarrassed about, then we started mm-hmm. talking and started feeling more comfortable with what's going on. I have a very good oncologist. We like to make him laugh too.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell her your joke?
Well, the first joke we had was when the nurse came in the office and she said, does the doctor usually see you in a gown? And I said, no, he usually wears a shirt and tie. And then Katie, the next time, saw this bulletin sitting there called
Those little
sex
pamphlets.
And cancer.
Yeah, it was like sex and the woman with cancer. And I took it to him and I said, I didn't know Nicholas Sparks had a new book. We just terrorized these like very straight-laced doctors.
They don't know what to do with
it. They don't know what to do with
it. Another time I came in with those little tiny hands, you know, that they have on Saturday Night Live.
And she had her little
who's here?
Blocked her eyes.
Say you have a humorous outlook, granted the cards you've been dealt.
Humor for us, it's always as a coping mechanism. Humor is a way of control.
Yeah.
It's a way of controlling the situation, controlling the narrative. And instead of whispering about cancer or acting like, you know, that everything's so awful, we'd rather laugh and we'd rather bully cancer because cancer sucks. So we're like, you're such a nerd, cancer, like get out of our face.
We're not a fan. We are not a fan fans of cancer.
So that's why we like to be lighthearted about it and make jokes, because cancer doesn't deserve our respect. People with cancer, we respect.
And we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. That's always been a little bit of a concern of mine, but this is how we deal with it. And it has made my life much better.
Better. Yeah. You've changed so much since your diagnosis. And the day that she was first diagnosed with supposedly the Cadillac of cancers, we get into the car and she's just like, she was like, well, I guess I'll go back to work. And I was like, absolutely not. I was like, this is your cancer day. Like, if there's any day to, you know, play hooky and do whatever you want and blow off work, this is the day. So we went, it was probably like 1 p.m. We went and had tacos and wine and
dirty martinis.
And then we went to the next place down the street and had creme brulee and wine all in the middle of the day. I think we went home and napped after that. The word should goes out the window, the way you should act or the way you should be or the way you should be living your life.
Well, someone told me that when you're diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, you're in 2 stages. You're either in the no-go stage and you just go home waiting to die, or you're in the go-go stage and you just go, go, go. So I chose the go-go stage and I was traveling. I wanted to spend time with family and I wanted to travel. So I was going everywhere, having just a blast,
knocking things off your bucket list.
Then the pandemic hit that's when Kate knew that I was wasting time. It felt like wasting valuable time.
Yeah, that's when the anxiety and depression started to creep back in for both of us. You know, I had moved back to Los Angeles. I took 1.5 years to be with her for the first 1.5 years of her diagnosis. I moved back to LA to work on a podcast for an app and a few other things in entertainment. And then the pandemic hit. As soon as it did, I packed up all my stuff in LA and drove cross country. Because I just knew my mom lived alone. She has a compromised immune system.
I have a white blood cell count that is laughable. It's like, anything in there? Yeah, it's crazy. She did all my outdoor stuff.
Yeah, all the shopping. And then I had to live like a 60-year-old woman with cancer for the entire pandemic. Mm. People thought that I had moved away. They're like, oh, I didn't know you're still in town. I'm like, yeah, because I just hang out with my mom. So we started off by doing things like
she couldn't go out.
Mm-mm. So I would make like movie nights where I'd make like a fort in the living room and like silly things like that. And that just wasn't enough. So no,
it was fun.
It's fun.
For one night.
Yeah. I'd cook and then we just kept gaining weight. So I decided to use the context that I'd had from my previous life. It feels like a previous life after the year 2020, but to connect her with people to have bucket list conversations. My mom's always been so into television, movies, entertainment, books, things like that. She's also like, her dirty secret is like reality television and like gossip stuff, like gossip columns. She's just always on her phone, either watching like bootleg Australian reality television that she's somehow figured out how to get onto some app that she downloaded, but she can't remember any of her passwords to anything else. I don't understand. She'll be like, can you believe that Bachelor and Bachelorette are back together again? And just scrolling through gossip constantly. So
you're making me sound very shallow. I'm a very deep person.
We all need our escapes.
Exactly. That's your
well, I'm an insurance agent during the day. That can be a little dry. I love it, but it can be a little dry sometimes.
Yes.
So a lot of times I get home and I'm just like, I know.
Yeah. So I started setting up these bucket list interviews. And well, Okay. The podcast was her idea from the start.
So I've been salty since 2012 when the movie Argo beat out the movie Lincoln for best picture. So I wanted to talk about that.
She wanted to make a blog as her bucket list thing. And she comes out of her bedroom with a notebook that she had written, handwritten, like 5 pages.
I think it was
and
eight.
Said, put this on the internet. Let's start a blog. I was like, so basically what you're asking me to do is to type up your like ramblings from your notebook and put it on the internet for you.
Yes, I was like, that's what I wanted.
No. And then when I started working in podcasting, then she was like, oh, we could make it into a podcast. And I was like, great. What does episode 2 look like? What does season 2 look like? So
I got to say, she did she had worked on a podcast and developed it. Basically from ground up, and no one will ever hear it, but that's just the way this works in your all's industry. But she had put together these different segments that we would have in our podcast, all dealing with cancer puns. So
because we didn't want to only talk about cancer, but we didn't want to ignore the cancer aspect. And my mom clearly has things that she holds grudges, clearly, since 2012.
Yeah. Steven Spielberg would agree with me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck wouldn't.
No.
So, so we created the segments. The name Stage 4 Clinger kind of just came to me, and I was like, "What do you think?" And you said, "Explain it to me." And I was like, "Well, you've got Stage 4, and you're really clingy, and it's a reference to I think Wedding Crashers. They're like, got a Stage 5 clinger here. Yeah.
And I'm a clinger. I cling on to my kids, so it's appropriate.
Yeah. If I don't answer her phone calls, I'll get like 7 texts like, hello.
So she named the first segment, Get Something Off Your Chest.
Yeah. Let me get something off my chest.
Which I have.
Obvious breast cancer pun.
Mastectomy.
And that's built her area in where she can talk about.
I can ramble.
She can ramble.
I can ramble.
And I can vent about her. So then segment 2 is Dying to Talk to You, where I set up, I'm her one woman make-a-wish. I set up bucket list worthy interviews for her.
She lets me talk during that segment.
I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that part. And we have met some amazing, amazing people by doing that. Katie has lifelong friends through this, I think.
Yeah. A lot of our guests check in with me weekly, daily, and then also as a means to check in with her. And it's just awesome.
Yes. But it's amazing to me how many of these people have a parent, a best friend, or someone who has dealt with cancer.
Yeah.
And my big concern about the podcast is, what is Kate going to do? And I'm like, boots up.
I'm going to replace her.
I love the dynamic between you two. And I was wondering, did you always have this close of a relationship, or did it grow over time because of your cancer diagnosis?
We've always had a close relationship. Well, it's different now because now it's not mother-daughter as much. I'm not allowed to tell her what to do.
Oh, that doesn't stop her.
No, it doesn't stop me from trying.
Yeah, but we had difficulties growing up when I'm trying to, obviously we're very different. I'm bigger in every sense of the word. Like, I want to be doing all of these things. I'm louder. I'm more crass, and she's so sweet and refined.
She did stand-up comedy that made me cry like a baby.
And she'd sit in the front row and just cry.
Yeah.
And so I'd incorporate her into the set because she still wanted to come support and make it about her.
I didn't want to make it about me, but there's certain things you don't want to hear come out of your daughter's mouth, if you know what I mean.
Fair enough. Right.
Sure. Yes. And so it took.
I was supporting that.
Yes. You bought the ticket. You came. Yeah. So, yeah, we had problems when I was trying out my boundaries and trying out, figuring out who I am.
And trying to push away, which is natural. And I have. Uh-huh.
And I'm not quite the daughter that you pictured. when you were thinking of what your daughter would be like, you thought we'd be in like matching outfits and going out for tea.
I wouldn't change her for anything. You know, she questions whether she wants to have children someday, and I'm like, well, who's going to take care of you when you're sick and old? So
who knows? I don't know.
I can't imagine.
I'll hire someone else's kid, maybe. It was through a lot of growth on both of our parts, figuring out that we can't change each other, but just accepting each other and then appreciating each other for exactly who we are in this moment.
And that's very hard for a mother.
It was not easy for you.
You know, in a lot of aspects. And I'm five. I was diagnosed in 2017. I had my surgery in 2017, May. I have been on, I don't know if you want to know real details, but I've been on a medication called Kisqali, and I've done, I'm starting my fifth year of
stage four,
very little disease progression. Now, I don't know. I'm feeling like maybe because I'm starting on year five, I mean, I made it past three, which is a big deal for breast cancer stage four. Year five, I wasn't sure if I would make it to year five. Mm-hmm. So now I'm feeling a little antsy, like, you know, a little ache and pain.
She's feeling nervous. In about 6 days, she has a PET scan.
Yeah.
And her cancer antigen numbers are up with her last blood work. So that's got her nervous.
Yeah. And that's not, it's not a definite indicator, but still it's enough to make me nervous. I want her to get out. It's been hard on her during the pandemic because she's a very social person. And I am too, but in much smaller amounts. Well,
and you're in your 60s and I turned 30 during the pandemic. And so that's different. Yeah, it's different.
Yeah. So I want her to get, and she wasn't able to because she didn't want to bring anything home to me.
Yeah.
So it was really hard on you, and I appreciate it.
It's strange now. I know this is a little off topic, but it's strange now that going back in from being a cancer caregiver during the pandemic, and now that I'm vaccinated and we don't have many cases in our small area, I'm getting back out doing, like, going to weddings and seeing people. And it has been exhausting to me. Like, I don't have any social battery built up, like, just be hanging out with my mom every single night, like watching some reality television. And now I go to like one wedding and I'm in bed for like a week. I can't handle it. So I'm trying to build up my stamina.
That's an over-exaggeration. Young. Yeah, no. She's really not a bit for a week.
No.
So let's go back to the guests on the podcast. Does everyone have to have a connection to cancer in one way or another, or do you just list them and then you just find out, wow, it impacts more people than you think?
No. Okay. I haven't reached out to anybody because of their connection to cancer, or at least the ones that I have didn't respond. No, it's just been just people that I think that my mom would enjoy talking to. And then it does turn out that cancer, you know, everyone has a personal connection to cancer in some way or another.
Now, this is not earth-shattering what I'm going to say, and everybody knows this, but laughter, I swear, we always kid on the podcast. I probably got an extra month out of this podcast because I've been laughing so much. And my favorite podcasts are the ones that let us be irreverent.
Yes.
You know, and go along with us. Those are the ones that I work. The ones that are afraid to make jokes. And they're wonderful. They're so sweet.
Oh, yeah. And maybe like one or two that are like almost like a little, maybe even put off a little bit by our like irreverence and happy-go-lucky attitudes and silliness. Not many. But it was so really funny when we recently talked to Rob Hubel, who is from, like, he's from The Office and a bunch of shows.
He's been in everything.
He's been in everything. We start and we're immediately cracking jokes. He's like, wait, sorry, what's the vibe here? He was like, you know, I think I made a mistake by not researching you guys before because I don't like to do that. So I don't have any preconceived notions, but now I'm not sure. And we're like, the vibe is very somber, Rob. He's like, I'm getting that.
So it kind of goes without saying that not everyone has a Kate with lovely connections to have a podcast. So what advice would you give to people who might be in a similar situation as you and have a bucket list? What would you tell them to do?
I would say start attacking. Well, you know, with the pandemic, it's so difficult. Like, the next thing I want to do is I want to milk a cow.
We're doing that for season three.
We should be doing that really pretty soon. But my advice is mask up and go do your bucket list, because we don't know how much time. No one knows how much time they have, but we really don't know how much time we have. So I'm a big advocate, get your vaccine. You have got to have that vaccine, and double mask if you need to, but get going on that bucket list. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a trip to China.
That's what I was going to say. Make achievable goals.
Exactly.
For us, this was achievable. It was something that I know how to do, and I do have the connection. So it was something that's like, okay, this is what we can do right now.
Right. Not many people would have that.
So whatever that means for for you, if it's like,
go see the Grand Canyon, that mm-hmm. should be attainable. And it's one of the most beautiful trips I've ever been on.
Mm-hmm. What the biggest thing for me was having this time capsule, these records of our time together and what my mom is like, and being able to, you know, when I eventually lose her, which will be horrible, but
oh, I want to talk about my mom. You know what? I want to say something that everyone needs to do is start writing these things down, because I can't remember like my great grandparents' names, you know. So you're right. That is a great idea.
Yeah. Anything you can do to document, even if it's just like when you get together, get the camcorder out, take extra pictures. And I know this sounds like a little morbid, but take photos and videos and records of the times that you think that you'd won't want to remember. Like we have pictures of her in the hospital with like family, and pictures of her during like the first days of treatment when she would be like, I don't want my picture taken, but I'm so glad that we have those as part of our journey. And for a lot of people, they don't get past that treatment phase. So then you're just ignoring, you know, like the last 4 months or the last however long you have. It doesn't have to be picture perfect, but you're going to want those memories.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.